Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montsies of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Big thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring today's podcast again. So Real Talk with Dana listeners can get 10% off of their first month at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Dana. And another big thanks to Ned, who is also sponsoring the show today. So Ned offers small batch CBD products from the finest full spectrum hemp, and you can grab 15% off at HelloNed.com/Dana. Now, today's guest of the podcast is Katie DiPaola, who is the CEO of Inner Glow Circle, a company that trains female entrepreneurs, leaders, and coaches who aspire to transform their own lives and the lives of others by becoming a life coach. So on today's discussion with Katie, we're actually not really talking about that at all. Instead, we're talking about chronic illness, specifically Lyme disease, and we're digging into perfectionism and people-pleasing, both in life and in business, and kind of what holds us back with perfectionism and trying to please others and the internalized beliefs that we have that really we're really projecting onto other people. And then finally, how to tune into your own inner confidence to move out of perfectionism and actually move forward with helpful decisions in your life. All right, Katie. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm super pumped to have you here.
Yeah. Thank you, Dana. Thanks for having me.
So I want to jump right in. You launched this big business, or it is a big business now, in Inner Glow Circle, right? And then basically in the beginnings of that, or at least in the early stages of building the brand and the company, you basically got hit by a truck. pretty tough like medical stuff, and we're really struggling with that for a while. So can you tell people about like what's the story there? Like what was going on there? Like how did you get out of it? Really go into it.
I got diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease, and then I actually also lost my brother to an accidental overdose. So it was a lot. And then 6 months after that, my then fiance committed himself to the psychiatric ward and broke off our engagement. I mean, really, it was like shit was hitting the fan in every direction. So I jokingly call it like the trifecta of disease, death, and divorce. And I'll put that in quotes, but he was involved in the business in the early years. And so we did have to go to court, and I eventually, you know, won back my full ownership, which is as me and my lawyer determined how it should have been from the very beginning. But it was a lot of stuff. And there was definitely a battle for me to fight, not only with my body, not only with my mental health, but then also in protecting my company and what I had created.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about this before we started recording, but for a lot of people, the only thing that they know about Lyme is from Yolanda on The Real Housewives, which we talked about before. We both watch, and you know, it's the best and worst thing ever.
Right.
But it's not exactly the best depiction of like what Lyme actually is. So could you tell people a little bit more about like what is Lyme disease? Like how do you actually get a diagnosis?
Yeah. I think the thing with Yolanda is like, you know, she obviously is someone who has a huge network, is like at a celebrity level, is quote unquote famous, and has a shit ton of resources. And she's depicting this experience of not being able to solve the problem, not being able to cure her Lyme. And I think, at least in what I've watched, you know, there's a lot of these like high-end doctors and like traveling to go to these medical centers that are like almost more like resorts, right? And so like if I didn't have Lyme disease, I would sort of be like, to me, it would almost add to this misunderstanding of the disease of like it being an invisible or a fake illness or sort of like a cold. You're just being dramatic, right? Like I could see how people might judge that, make those judgments. But the reality is that the disease is very, very difficult to diagnose from the get-go. Sometimes it shows on a blood test, sometimes it doesn't. Beyond that, there's a huge controversy in the medical field about whether or not Lyme, chronic Lyme, even quote-unquote, exists. And what can happen is some people can get Lyme treated for Lyme in the early stages. Let's say you get a bullseye rash or you know you got bit, right? You see a tick on you, which like those deer ticks are like the tip of a pen. Like they're tiny, tiny, right? So the chances of seeing it are slim to none. Not everybody gets the bullseye rash, but if you have those things and you get treated or you know, you're out in the woods and then all of a sudden you wake up with like a fever and chills and feel really, really sick. You might not have the flu. You might have gotten bit by a tick, but it doesn't always come on that quickly. So not everyone gets diagnosed early on and not everyone goes through treatment early on. On one hand, even if you do go through treatment early on, it might not kill off the disease completely. And that's why there's this new term like coined by Johns Hopkins called post-treatment Lyme. I think that's the term, but it's like, after Lyme treatment, you can still have these symptoms, right? Which are just a continual manifestation of Lyme disease. I'm sure there's somebody listening, maybe multiple people who are going to be like, maybe that's actually what's wrong with me. I mean, this is what just happened with Justin Bieber, right? Like he went through years of being sick. People, fans or maybe I guess haters is the better word, which I think like every hater is ultimately a fan, right? But you know, saying he was on drugs and he was this and all that. But the reality was he's been really sick with Lyme disease. And when you think about somebody at that level of fame, I mean, really a huge level of fame, right? And resources. And I always say like any money, any problem that can be solved with money or the money that you have in the moment isn't a real problem. And so you look at someone like Justin Bieber who has so much money and so many resources and knows everybody. And even he didn't know what was wrong for a long time, that sort of shows you. I mean, that should only be more evidence for how messed up it is. So maybe you got bit and you got treated and you could still have symptoms. Or, and this is what happened to me, I got bit when I was 18. And now in hindsight, I remember it. But when it happened, I was just like, oh, maybe a spider bit me. I don't know. I had a little red mark and I ignored it. And then what happened was a few months later, I went to college and got diagnosed with mono. And that was sort of the start of the downfall of my health.
Yeah. So what are the main symptoms that people experience if they have Lyme?
So it could be like really, really intense night sweats. It could be memory loss. That's a really, really big one. Confusion, brain fog. For me, I just felt like I was hungover from the time I was 18 to right before my 30th birthday. So for 12 years, I just felt hungover all the time. And I'm not a big drinker. And like, I had periods in college and when I moved to New York City and all that, but I've never been able to really be a party girl because I, like, that was how I was always functioning. So if you have a hangover on top of a consistent hangover, like, you're really screwed.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting because the symptoms that you're talking about, and this probably makes a lot of sense, right? Like the symptoms that you're talking about are common in a lot of other chronic diseases as well. Yeah. So I'm assuming that that's one of the reasons why it's so hard to get diagnosed because they're kind of like, you know, blanket symptoms. Like those could be flu symptoms, they could be chronic fatigue symptoms, those could even be symptoms of another autoimmune disease or celiac or something like that. So,
right. I mean. And yeah, and I got tested for a lot of things. And like some doctors will say chronic fatigue is just a catch-all for like, you know, other things that can't be diagnosed, right? Yeah. That you're not just like chronically tired, it's a hormone issue or you have Lyme or there's something else going on an autoimmune level, but you just can't get a proper diagnosis yet. And so I did get diagnosed with a lot of those things. And the other thing that really gets misdiagnosed as Lyme a lot is MS because Lyme has a lot of physical symptoms like in terms of pain, you know, chronic pain, just feeling really achy and sometimes even losing feeling. So people can get paralysis from Lyme. And that's what actually ended up happening to me. And that was how I ended up getting diagnosed. I lost feeling in half of my body. And that was what really finally motivated me. At this point, I knew that it was Lyme. Like I really knew deep down. One or two people had mentioned it to me and I was ignoring it because I was afraid of it. But by the time I lost feeling in half my body, I was like, okay, this has gone too far. I need to face the music.
Yeah, that's so tough. So once you finally get a diagnosis, and I know this is a really, like, this question has a lot of many different answers and controversial answers, but I'm open to all avenues on this podcast. I know people take a lot of different approaches to treatment for Lyme, and it's also way different based on your means and accessibility, right? Like, I'm sure Justin Bieber is going to have a much different treatment plan than someone like you or I would have, right? So, like, what are the most, I would say, common treatments for Lyme?
Well, here's the thing about Lyme. Like, there is, like, the general population believes, and general population, including the medical field, believes there is no cure. I was able to find a doctor who could cure me. And so I actually think that whatever Justin Bieber figures out is probably going to be very similar to what I eventually was able to find for myself. I went through 6 months of weekly treatments with IVs, but they weren't antibiotics. It was a very alternative method. And, you know, I worked with an MD, like with a doctor, but what he practices is actually very like European. I was reading an article last night because Justin Bieber has talked a lot about it, but Kelly Osbourne also had Lyme disease. And she talks about how she went to Germany to get treated. And Avril Lavigne has been a big activist. And then Ali Hilfiger wrote a book called Bite Me, and she's, you know, talked about it a lot. So there are a handful of celebrities that have really started to speak up, but I'm sure there's so many people that have a lot of success and fame and wealth and that don't even know that they have Lyme, because like, this isn't like something that wealthy, rich people are absolved of. Like, it's just the entire medical community is really at war around this issue.
Yeah. And I bet, because it seems like, you know, a lot of the people that we've been mentioning and like yourself included, like these people have big platforms, they have, you know, big businesses and everything. And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about is like, you were in the beginning stages of your business when all of this stuff was happening.
Yeah.
And like being sick is really tough for everyone, but especially if you have your own business, because it's like, if you don't work, you don't get a paycheck, right? And then right. You don't have money that you can then use for treatments and to get better and stuff. So how did you manage that?
So I got diagnosed with Lyme January of 2014, and I started IGC in January of 2015. Okay. So I actually got diagnosed with Lyme first, and I was going through my very, very first treatment program. I went through 3 treatments. My first one was like antibiotic heavy. It made me really, really sick. So it actually made me sicker before I got better. Look, here's the thing. I mean, it's such a great question, Dina, but the reality is that my business saved my life because it gave coaching. At the time I was in 2014, I was just running my private practice. So I was like doing some workshops. I had started running this women's circle that I was hosting at my house once a month. I partnered with 2 other friends of mine and did a group coaching program that we marketed together. But at this point, I was like phasing out of my day job, starting to work from home with that job and really growing my coaching business. And with my coaching business, I could work from bed and nobody knew, because I wasn't, and this was still like in 2014. I think even the internet has changed so much in the past few years, and the industry has changed so much in the past few years, but I wasn't even taking video meetings with my clients. Like, I was just meeting with people over the phone. They had no clue that I was like no makeup, sweatpants, or no pants in bed. You know, I joke a lot that I built my business from the bathtub because I spent a lot of time in the bathtub. Like, I was taking baths, Epsom salt baths, like every day, you know, and I was bringing my phone or my, like, I remember I would like sit like a little stool outside the bath, put my computer on it, and I would work, because like, my whole thing became this. It became everything feels hard. How could I make this feel at least a little bit easier? So if I had to write an email, or if I had to get back to a bunch of clients, or if I had to, and I really, really was like in physical pain, I would just go in the bathtub and be like, okay, this feels a little bit easier. And I think that's like such an important thing. And like, I grew so much strength inside of myself because of that, because now I don't live in physical pain every day. And now I'm Lyme free. And but I still have that stamina and I still have that mindset of like, fuck this shit. I don't want to do this. How could I make it easier? And I still work from the bathtub sometimes.
That's awesome. I love that. So taking all of that into account, basically dealt this like really shitty hand of cards with like this like trifecta of these things that you were dealing with, right? It's like one of the things I think that people really struggle with, and I actually get this question a lot of the time too, because I have celiac and was dealing with all this health stuff, very different from yours, right? But at a different point in my life also while trying to build my business. And people always ask me like, how do you stay positive when you've been dealt such a shitty hand? Or like, how do you stay positive with chronic health conditions?
It's a big question. Like, I think, first of all, like shout out, because I'm in the gluten-free world too. That's like a big thing with Lyme disease. It can really trigger a lot of your symptoms. And that is like a huge journey too. I mean, celiac is huge in terms of a barrier and something to have to work around. I mean, I think the way that you stay positive is like you focus on the good things, you focus on what's working. But I think what's different is like for a lot of people, they can like do mindset work once a week or even once a day. And it's like, okay, good. I'm like set up for the day. For me, it was like every fucking 10 minutes, like I was having to get my head straight. You know what I'm saying? So that was what was different for me, was that I had grown up in a family that was really big into being positive. You're very blessed. Look at everything you have. Be grateful. God helps those who help themselves. Take responsibility for your life. I was listening to Tony Robbins tapes on the way to school with my dad in like the 90s. Like, you know, that was how I grew up. But when then being sick and losing my brother and all of that came on top of it, it just had to become such a more frequent practice. That's where I had to get a little bit more humble, because for a long time, to be honest, Dana, I was quite victimized by everything I was going through. I really felt like I had been done to. And I had to have some wake up calls around that, because I still had so much. You know, I still had an amazing family, even though my brother was gone. I had people to grieve with. I didn't have my health in the same way, but there were like, I still had a lot of my health and I did have certain resources. What was so hard for me was that even though I had resources and even though I consider myself to be like quite intelligent overall, I couldn't hack it. I couldn't figure out a solution. And that was so defeating to me. And to have 30 doctors tell me they didn't know what was wrong with me, or that Lyme disease wasn't real, when I started to suggest, could this be Lyme? That, you know, well, Lyme can't exist if you got bit 10 years ago. That was the really, really hard and defeating part. And the way I dealt with that ultimately was I just kept saying, like, there's a chance that they're right, but there's also a chance that they're wrong. And I had to keep asking myself, like, what's actually possible? Like, if 30 doctors told me I'll never get rid of my Lyme, is it still possible that I could? And the answer was always yes. And I wrote a book that's going to be coming out later this year. And like, that is the premise of the book, that like, you know, we have an opportunity to take every obstacle in our lives and turn it into an opportunity, but it requires us to choose. And it requires us many times a day to be asking ourselves the question of like, well, what's actually possible? What's actually possible? Not what's practical or probable, but what's possible. And that opened up my whole world.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's something that is very actionable that people can do. Like you were saying, the mindset stuff that some people need to do just once a day, but some people need to do it every 10 minutes or every hour, or even just reminding yourself of that every once in a while can be super powerful, whether you're going through a chronic illness or whether you're just going through, you know, some other tough shit, right? It's like, it's super helpful to remember that, like, yeah, having thoughts of like, why did this happen to me? Why is this happening to me? That's maybe a kind of process that you need to go through, but that doesn't mean that you need to stay there, right? There is always like a light at the end of the tunnel. There's always, you can always get out of your situation, basically.
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't bring my brother back to life per se. I mean, I have certain views about reincarnation and things like that. But like, I can't bring him back in his, in that way. But what I realized was like, I could, and this is really radical, and some people will resonate with this and other people will think I'm like totally cuckoo, but like, I realized actually it was possible for Bo to live on. Like, I had this radical thought one day. I talk about this in my book too, but, and again, some people are going to like this and some people aren't. And I understand that, but I had this radical thought one day when I was going through this process with myself. And I said, you know, the repeating thought in my head was, my brother's dead, my brother's dead, my brother's dead. Like, that's all I was thinking about every day for like 2 years. And then I was also like, you know, I take breaks to like get on the phone with a client. I mean, it's really quite amazing when you realize like, or when I realized I was growing my business the entire time and unknowingly, but probably also sort of knowingly writing a book and taking a lot of notes on what I was going through. But my my predominant thought was, my brother's dead. And I one day had the thought, well, what's actually possible? Like, what if he's not dead? What if he's just like living in another dimension and he's good? And then I started to think about that. And I was like, oh, this is just like, this is just the world that we live in. And what if I can have a relationship with him on the other side as like an angel or an entity or whatever? And everybody's got different spiritual beliefs. And I'm not here to push mine on anybody. I don't even know fully know what mine are. I just know that there were certain things that I started to think, huh, what if that's possible? And it started to make me feel better. And my whole thing is like, if it makes me feel better and it's a healthy coping mechanism, some people might say I'm a little delusional, but I you know, I got to create a world where I ended up having a relationship with my brother and I was able to communicate with him and get guidance from him. Just the other night, I was like, Bo, what do you think about this? I'm like, God, I'm so weird. But like, it's, you know, for a lot of people who grieve, that's something that becomes very healing for them.
Yeah. And I mean, you said that there are going to be a lot of people who, you know, don't agree with you or whatever, but you can't, well, I guess you can, but it's not great to disagree with whatever works for someone, whatever coping mechanism they use, whatever positive force they use in order to deal with their own grief or their own situation, right? Like, it's not hurting anyone else. You're not, like you said, you're not imposing it on anyone else. You get to do whatever works for you, and no one should be able to tell you different.
Right. And I think, you know, you make a really great point. And right now we're talking about grief and loss, which is an extreme topic, in my opinion, but this could be anything, right? Like, this could be, there's a lot of people that we both work with who they're doing something like different with their career that's outside of the box, and their family or friends like don't get it. And that creates a lot of friction for them. But at the end of the day, it's like, who cares? Like, who cares if they get it or not? What if you could release your attachment to them getting it? There's a part of you that thinks they need to get it, right? Or, you know, we love who we love. If like you love somebody and your family is like not into it or not supportive, like, yes, that's disappointing. And the hope and the prayer ultimately is like for people to be more loving. But at the end of the day, it's also like, no, you love who you love and you get to choose what you choose. And so I think the other thing that's possible here is not caring so much what other people think and making our choices and really choosing our choices. We could say, oh yeah, I made a decision, but then it's like we spend the rest of the week analyzing the decision. So it's like, well, did you actually make a decision? And I will say, Dana, there's so much, and I know you've had your own experiences with this too, but there's so much freedom in actually deciding. So I would like decide something like, I am going to get rid of my Lyme. And then any evidence that Lyme was could not be gotten rid of, I was just like, bye. You know, I started to get rid of that stuff, right? And it's the same with like my business on a day-to-day basis. I'm like, I'm going to build a team that I really believe in and feel really connected to. And if that's not happening, it's like we either work on it or things need to shift. And for me in the early, early years before any of this chaos happened, it was like, I am not going to work a desk job. I'm not going to do that. I was still in a desk job when I was deciding that I was not going to. So that's where like our current reality and our future reality that we've declared and chosen for ourselves doesn't always, like the timelines don't always match up right away. Yeah. But we have to decide that that's ultimately what's going to happen.
Yeah. The listeners can't see, but the entire time when you were saying that you decided you weren't going to work a desk job anymore, I was like smiling and nodding the whole time because that is the exact same situation that I was in. So I used to work in political consulting downtown. And when I was there, I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to work a desk job. I'm not going to work in a job where I feel like what I do every day doesn't matter. Or yes. What I do, period, doesn't matter, right? So you just have to decide that and kind of, you know, surrender it up to the universe while still working at it at the same time. Is like, I believe and I have decided that this is going to be my end game or my next step. And I'm going to do whatever I can in order to get there. Hold up, wait a minute. Time to take a quick break to talk about today's sponsor, BetterHelp. So let's say hypothetically that you are a listener of this podcast, okay, obviously, who is working through their body image and struggles with their relationship with food. And you've heard me and my guests talk about many times about seeking out professional help, whether it's going to a therapist or a counselor to help work through the issues that we have around food and our bodies, like how we might use food and exercise as a control mechanism. And all of the not so lovely shame and deep-rooted beliefs that go along with that. But have you actually gone to see someone? What is holding you back? Because for a lot of people, it's the cost, because in-person therapy is super expensive, or finding someone in person is really tough because you either have to ask people for recommendations, which a lot of people don't want to do because there's a lot of, you know, questions and stuff wrapped up with that, or they also don't want to like blindly search for therapists in your area on the internet, because how are you supposed to know if you're going to find one who you vibe with and it is a specialist in what you actually need, and it might take a while to go through a couple of therapists and yada, yada, yada. There are so many boundaries, basically. And that is where BetterHelp comes in. So BetterHelp is an online therapy platform that is 100% privacy protected, affordable, and provides professional counseling services from thousands of licensed, accredited, and board certified therapists. To get started, you fill out an intake questionnaire online, and BetterHelp can match you up with your own counselor who you can see from your own home in your pajamas if you want, either over the phone or on a privacy protected video platform. And as a reminder, it's not a crisis line, it's not self-help, it's professional counseling done securely online. And you can get connected with someone in under 24 hours, which is a whole lot faster than a bunch of weeks or months, which sometimes you have to wait in order to get an appointment in person with someone, which is not great, especially someone who you haven't even met yet, right? So BetterHelp's mission is to provide everyone with easy, affordable, and private access to professional counseling anytime, anywhere. So you can get started today. Real Talk with Dana listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Dana. That's betterhelp.com/DANA. And today's show is also sponsored by Ned. So let's say hypothetically that you're a listener of this podcast. Oh, okay, wait. Hello, Dana. Are we doing this again? Okay, fine. Let's just go with it. You've heard me do a few episodes on CBD a while back, and specifically, we talked about CBD's research-backed benefits for anxiety, insomnia, depression, chronic pain, inflammation, and a ton of other health-promoting goodies. But we didn't talk about any specific hemp oil or CBD brands, only how to spot a high-quality product from a phony product, which, hello, you want a good quality product. You don't want to be spending the kind of money that people are charging for hemp and CBD products right now if it's not even going to work, right? And then what if you don't want to take all of the extra work to listen back to those hours of podcast episodes that I did for you, and you just want to try out a high-quality, lab-tested hemp oil made from organic, whole, and natural non-GMO ingredients that is not only safe, but actually works? And that is where Ned comes in. So Ned has a collection of full-spectrum hemp oil products that contain CBD extracted from the finest organic hemp plants, and it's all grown in a small 12-acre homestead in the middle of Colorado. But you might be wondering, why does Ned call it hemp oil? Isn't CBD what we're talking about here? So did you know that due to FDA regulations, only pharmaceutical companies can actually use the term CBD legally, meaning that there are a lot of companies out there actually illegally using this term? Anyway, speaking of legal stuff, little medical disclaimer here. Please work with a practitioner to figure out a dosage or titration schedule that works for you depending on the health condition you would like to use hemp oil for, and make sure you're using a good one like Ned, and definitely check the rules of your job, because There is a minuscule amount of THC in Ned because it's a full spectrum hemp product instead of an isolate. Still, it has less than 0.3% THC as allowed by law, but not allowed in certain professions like the military and certain government jobs. So just time to check on that before you go right in. And no, it will not get you high. So sorry if that's what you're going for. You need the other part of the plant. But if you want to try out some high quality small batch CBD products from the finest full spectrum hemp and start feeling relief from some of the diet culture anxiety of January, you can grab 15% off your order at helloned.com/Dana. That's helloned.com/Dana for 15% off your order at helloned.com. Okay, now that we talked about all those goodies, time to get back to the episode with Katie. And I don't think this is unique to us. Like, a lot of people have roadblocks, you know, when they're trying to decide something, but there's a lot of stuff that gets in their way that makes them think, oh, I'll never be able to get there, right? And one of those things that you said is like, constantly trying to validate other people's opinions, or like people pleasing and perfectionism also. So can you talk a little bit about how the people pleasing and perfectionism can hold people back from actually deciding and going for something?
Yeah, it's funny. I like have to go back pretty far in my mind to answer that question. And so, you know, I think about before I decided to go through my coach training program, like the program that I went through. I think what happened was like, I got to a point where I was so frustrated with myself, how frustrated I was. I was like bored of being bored. I was bored of being so disengaged. I think I was depressed. I never got diagnosed as being depressed, but I think I was depressed when I was working in New York and going from job to job and just really not finding any meaning. And exactly what you said at being at your political consulting job, like that feeling of I'm not going to be in a job where what I do doesn't matter. I remember having this feeling like I want to end my days feeling like I was like used up, like my gifts were used. Like, I'm a hard worker. I've always been like that. And I was a straight A student growing up and very, very much a perfectionist. And it still sometimes does slow me down. I really now have to surrender my perfectionism to like the greater good. But I think the biggest breakthrough for me was that it became like that the disappointing myself was more painful than disappointing other people. And I started to feel like I was dying inside. And it just was sort of a practical thing. Like, yeah, the people around me might not get it. My parents might not be supportive. I might have to do all of this on my own, but like, I can't live with myself anymore. So they're going to have to get over it. Or like, bye. Like, if you really aren't going to be supportive of me, like, you're not my friend to begin with. And I think that as we become more and more ourselves, and this is something I see a lot with our students, and I think this is probably the conscious or subconscious fear a lot of people have that I had, and probably you had too, Dana, which is like, what if I'm alone on the other side? What if there's nobody? What if everyone thinks I'm a weirdo? What if people abandon me? What if, and this goes for any big decision, whether it's like leaving a career path or, you know, I grew up in a family business, and like when I say everybody works for the family business, like literally like 95% of my family works for the family business, and I have a big family. So that's a lot of people. And so people will say, oh, well, you had a background in, you know, entrepreneurship and you grew up around that. And yes, I did to an extent, but it was a completely different business. I didn't grow up around like everybody was an entrepreneur. My granddad was an entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. And like everybody else then worked for the family business. So what I was doing was out there. I lied to my parents. When I went through coach training, I didn't tell them. I told them I was going to a workshop the first weekend of class. And then after like multiple weekends of going to a workshop, they were like, why are you in all of these self-help workshops every weekend? What's wrong with you, Katie? You know? So eventually I was like, look, I am going through this coaching program. And I thought they were going to have no clue what I was even talking about, even though my dad listened to Tony Robbins growing up. I didn't think they were going to see it as an actual career path because I didn't grow up in a family where like people wrote books or created intellectual property or used their natural gifts as services. Like my family business is very product oriented. So I judged myself as like, okay, you're doing something that's quite intangible. Other people are going to think that's intangible and they're not going to believe in you. They're going to criticize you. But you know what I actually eventually got to, and I'm curious if you've ever had a similar experience, was that the only doubt I ever received from other people was only a reflection of my own doubt.
Oh, yeah. It's like you're projecting your own insecurities onto other people, right? And I kind of went through the same thing when I was starting my own business, when I went back to school the first time, and you feel like that, you know, it's not real and nobody thinks it's real. And everybody thinks that what you're doing isn't a real job. And what do you mean you're doing this? And like, how are you ever going to be successful and that kind of stuff? And I think right. that I thought that other people were thinking that about me because that I had that deep-seated belief that, you know, what if I can't do this? Or,
right.
And I think that's kind of, everybody goes through that at some point, whether you truly believe it or not, when you're starting your own business or when you're making a leap of faith, it's like, is this actually going to work out? You know, whether you're
right.
starting a new job or you're moving to a new place or fill in the blank with whatever major life change you have. I mean, I'm sure kids even go through this, like when you're going to college for the first time, or if you're going to, you know, a school that's away from home or whatever it is, it's like, will this actually work? And it's even scarier when you're coming from a stable job that gives you income every week for just showing up, basically, right? Like if you right. have a 9-to-5, you get paid every 2 weeks or every week or whatever it is. And when you're an entrepreneur, you don't make regular, you know, quote unquote money like that. Like it's not every 2 weeks you get paid, depending right. on the type of your business, especially if you're service-based. It's based on the amount of clients or students or whatever you have, plus all these other things. But it's really hard to get to the point where you eventually will start seeing kind of like little glimmers of hope, or like when your parents or a friend or someone starts recommending you to other people, it's like, oh, they finally see me as an expert. And that allows you to really feel validated and see yourself as like, oh yeah, I did this thing. And like, I am going to continue to grow and be successful.
Yeah. I think that's so important. And I also, to add to that, have found that like, the people who I'm most worried about not supporting me often become the most supportive. It's just sometimes like it takes people a little while to catch up.
Yeah.
And I really do think that that same mantra is true, that like if you're, you know, we get people all the time who like want to go through coach training, but they're like, my husband's not being supportive, or my husband, you know, I talked about it with my husband, and I'm like thinking to myself like, okay, maybe on one hand, your husband's like not supportive of all your goals and dreams, which like I'm like, why are you married to him? Right. And that's one piece. And then on the other piece, I'm like, how are you going to him? And I get making financial decisions together in a partnership. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I just wonder like, and this is because of my own experience, like, how are you going to him? Are you saying like, oh, there's this company, I think I want to go through this training, and like, but I don't know. And I don't know if I can really create a business. Well, he's picking up on all your worries, right? But if you're like, listen, I know this is a big investment, but I've actually worked out the numbers. And if I can get 2 clients, I'll be able to pay this off monthly and make money back. And that's with 2 clients. Like, that's like conservative ROI. I would really love your support. Like, that's different, you know? And so I think our being, we talk a lot about like, there's a difference between like your being and what you're doing. And so 2 different people could go to their partners, whether it's, you know, their husband, their wife, whatever, and ask the same question, which is like, will you support me in this endeavor, but in a really different way? And you're likely going to get 2 very, very, very different responses based on your being.
Yeah. And it's like when you're presenting that, it sounds like it's either a fear-based presentation where, you know, all of your fears and insecurities and stuff are coming out, or even if you still are harboring some of those things, it's the other side of it is a confidence-based presentation. And like, which one do you think is going to turn out better? You know?
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
So I think it's an opportunity to look inside. You know, the outside is always a mirror for what's going on the inside.
Yeah, definitely. Taking that, how can people, provided that a lot of us have these, whether they're more present or buried a little bit, deep-seated fears or insecurities about making these decisions and going for it, right? Like, what are some tips that you can give or that you give your clients or your students about how to approach things in a more confident manner?
I think that the first thing is really getting clear on what you want to say and what your intention is. I think that if you start with the intention or the outcome, like, I want to walk away from this conversation with, you know, my mom really understanding why I wrote my book, or I want to walk away from this conversation with my partner saying yes to my goals and dreams. If you start with the end result in mind, then you can work backwards and figure out how to get there. And the other person gets a say too, right? Like, even though I'm writing a book, my family and the people around me, like my business partner, you know, like they get to say, hey, I'm comfortable with, or hey, I'm not comfortable with this. Or, Katie, you left out this great part. Why would you not include this? Let's include this. And so I'm a very collaborative person, and that is how I best create, is ultimately in partnership. But I think that, like, you have to go to the table knowing who you are as much as you know who you are in that moment, knowing what you want to say as much as you know what you want to say in that moment. And if you were talking about confidence, like, I always talk about practicing. People think it's so dorky of me, but like, I will literally practice conversations out loud, or I'll record myself, or I'll do it in the mirror while I'm getting ready and putting on my makeup. And I'll just like role play out the whole thing because it helps me feel comfortable. And when I feel comfortable, then I can be a lot more confident.
Yeah, those are really good tips. And I have definitely done that before, especially when you're going to have one of those big conversations. And I find that if it's something that I'm worrying about constantly, you know, like, I know this, either this conversation is coming or this like event is coming, and I'm super worried about like what I'm going to do or what I'm going to say in that situation, it then makes you feel a lot better and you have to worry less if you do role play it out or like come up with a couple of things you want to say. And
right,
you might say them in the moment or you might not, but at least you have a game plan when you're going in there.
Absolutely. And everything's going to change. But like, you know, I have to say, this is, I think, an important topic. As I grow as a leader and as I'm in charge of more things and a, you know, bigger budget and more revenue and, you know, more investments and all these things, both personally and professionally. And as I learn more about being an adult and being a woman, and particularly being a businesswoman, what I'm realizing, at least for myself, and I'm sure this will be helpful for some other people, is that the way to be smarter and the way to be sharper is to have more preparation. So like, for example, I had a meeting, like a 90-minute meeting today with my business partner, and I was really leading the meeting. You know, my role in the company is CEO and hers is COO. And that's like, based on how our brains work, that's like really where we belong, at least for now. And so I was running the agenda, and I probably spent 4 or 5 hours preparing for that 90-minute meeting. I'm not somebody who like prepares for coaching sessions. Like with my clients, I would just show up. It was always very, very natural for me. But as I'm learning to be a manager and a leader and a visionary in a bigger capacity, I realized how much I need to like know my own stuff inside and out. So I will write out all of my ideas and I will write out everything I want to say. And even like, I've done probably 20 or 30 podcast interviews in the past like 90 days, and I still bring notes to every meeting. And this is at least how I feel. I see other leaders in the world and like successful businesswomen, and I'm like, she just shows up. Like, you know, because I don't see her papers or I don't see the preparation that she's done. and maybe I'm just slow, but what I think is that, and I've asked other people about this, but what I think is that there's a lot more happening behind the scenes and a lot more preparation and learning than we realize, and that everybody's really studying to be able to be in the role that they're in. Playing back to the original, where this conversation kind of stemmed from, it's like, you might prepare to go to your partner to say, hey, I want to invest in this course. What do you think? Or, you know, you might actually practice talking to someone about something that's uncomfortable. Maybe you're in a day job and you're starting to want to phase out and you need to have a conversation with your boss. I would practice, you know, and I think we think everything's easy for everyone else. And I think the reality is people are preparing a lot more and doing a lot more work behind the scenes.
Yeah. And I think that point is super potent, even or especially in the business scene, is a lot of the time when someone starts to get like shared a lot, or they suddenly become really influential or popular or whatever it is, people are like, oh my God, like they're an overnight success. 99 times out of 100 people in the business world, you know, whether it's in music or service based or like what we're doing, nobody's an overnight success, right? It's like it took them years of preparation, like you said, and work and all of this stuff that you would have no idea about to get exactly where they are today. So one of the tips that I always like to give people is like, don't compare someone else's like 10th year into their business right to where you are right now. And that's also what I talk about with, like, you know, in disordered eating and body image and trying to improve on your relationship with food and your body, is like, don't compare yourself to where someone else is right now to where you are right now, because you have no idea like where they've been and how long it took them to get where they are right now too.
I love what you're saying, Dina. I think it's so important. And I think that something I'd like to add to that as a strategy for people is like, don't compare. I think comparison really distracts us and demotivates us. But I will say it's very hard for us, I think, especially as women, not to like look around and see what else is going on and what other people are doing. I would suggest that you get curious, that when you see somebody out there who like looks like they're crushing it or inspires you, one, figure out what it is. Like, what is it that inspires you? Is it how they look? Is it the way they write? Is it how they speak? Like, there's typically specific things that you're drawn to. And sometimes this is like playing back to what I was joking about with Justin Bieber's haters, but sometimes people that sort of annoy you, but you're still watching them on Instagram or Facebook or wherever, sometimes those people are actually inspiring you. They're just shuffling up something inside of you that you may not be fully aware of or distinguished around yet. And so I encourage you to like take a look at what that is. You might feel jealous, or, you know, I have these feelings come up all the time, and I'll like look at Beyonce and I'm like, I feel so jealous. And it's like, of what? And it's like her perfect boobs. Like, she posted this Instagram thing, or somebody posted on her account, and I was like, oh my God. But it's not her breasts. It's like her vibe. It's just like how she owns who she is. And you don't have to be Beyonce to do that. I can be myself and own who I am, right? That's a kick in my butt to like get out of the sweatpants and put on an outfit that really makes me feel like a boss. And sometimes I feel like a boss when I'm wearing sweatpants, but it's about understanding what's driving you and what's motivating you. And I think that if you can get curious about other people and about their history and about how they got where they are now, and if you're a year into your business, go look at where Beyonce was a year into her career, or, you know, Oprah, or whoever you look up to, right? And there's so many entrepreneurs and micro entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and influencers. And there's just so many people we can even look at, but everybody has a story. And I always try to track it back and look at like, okay, well, if we're 5 years old as a company, some of the biggest brands that I look up to, where were they 5 years in?
I love that. That's such good advice. Okay, a couple of things I want to ask you, like, before we close out. One thing that I love to ask my guests is, what is one book that you recommend that everyone should read? And it can be on whatever topic you want.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm a tie between You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. I think that's like a life-changing, mindset-changing book. And then one of the most impactful books for me, and particularly in getting my book written, was Love Warrior by Glennon Doyle.
Funny, because my podcast guest last week, so the episode that comes out before you, also recommend the Louise Hay book. So,
oh, good.
That's definitely one that I need to move to the top of my list, because I think I've gotten at least like 5 or 6 different recommendations for that.
I'm surprised you haven't read it. You'll love it. It's so classic. And she has such an interesting story. Louise Hay is not alive anymore. Well, not technically, but we know what that really means, right? So she could be all of our spirit guides, but she self-published You Can Heal Your Life. And then from that created Hay House Publishing. And so, you know, I think to me, she's really, she was like a trailblazer, you know, in terms of like using self-publishing as a platform to get her work out into the world faster. And then also from that, designing an entire business model around it. Hay House, the thing about them that's so interesting, and I think this is something that's really important to me, is like we live in a world where there's so many solopreneurs and personal brands. Like Tony Robbins, I don't know why I keep talking about him. He's like sort of controversial. But for example, Tony Robbins or like Gabby Bernstein or Marie Forleo or a lot of these self-help authors and speakers, their brand is them. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I've always been really committed to building a brand that wasn't attached to me in particular, where like it didn't need me and it would live on whether or not I'm here. And a lot of that inspiration came from being sick for so long and not knowing if I was going to be able to continue to run the business. But you know, I think building a legacy is a really interesting thing to look at too, particularly when we live in a world, a culture that is so like influencer based.
Yeah, for sure. And the many like joys and also problems that come along with that, right?
Yeah, totally.
Tell people where they can find you. And I know you said your book's not coming out until later this year, but like, what's it called? Like, plug all the things.
Okay. So the book is called At Least You Look Good. And it's really like an owner's manual to navigating loss, all kinds of loss and, you know, disappointments and missed opportunities, and learning how to love again, learning how to thrive again, learning how to create opportunities, grow your business from that. It's really a mindset book. And as I've grown as a coach and as a leader, and I don't do a ton of like one-on-one coaching or coaching period, but I come from that world and I speak that language. And I think I've, you know, really become quite a leader and coach around mindset. Mindset is such an interesting word because I think it's so trendy right now. But at the core, all of this stuff, therapy and healing and being healthy, like it all impacts your mindset. And it's not just like writing out your beliefs or like saying affirmations, or that's not all the stuff that's considered mindset work. Mindset is just like changing your mind about things and creating a space for yourself to think differently and looking at things one way and then being able to say like, yeah, but it could also be this, or here's what's possible, right? Again, that's such a great question. But the book is called At Least You Look Good. And it's also a commentary on socially, and this is really important for you and your message too, Dana, but like socially as women, people often judge us with our external appearances and will sort of for themselves decide whether or not our problems are quote unquote real. Because I can't tell you how many times, and I talk about this and tell some of the funny and not funny stories, but how many times people would say to me like, you don't look like your brother just died, or like, but you don't look sick, right? Or, and that was like a huge thing with Lyme. I mean, they called it an invisible illness for a reason. And a lot of like other autoimmune diseases are like this too. And just because you have whatever, even if you have cancer, you might not look sick. Who said you have to look sick? That has no connection, but we connect it. We're constantly judging each other by appearance. You know, we do judge the book by its cover. And my book will have a very cute cover. But in general, I don't think we should be judging each other like that. And that was one of the things that kept me from getting help, that kept me from getting a proper diagnosis. I wasn't just diagnosed with Lyme disease. I was eventually diagnosed with generalized anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and OCD. Like, I had all this stuff that I was dealing with that the trauma had really brought to the surface. But because of the fact that, like, I still was like wearing makeup and getting dressed in the morning and functioning, quote unquote, functioning, because I wasn't functioning at my ultimate, people really assumed that I was okay. Even when I was like, sometimes it felt like I was screaming, like, I'm not okay, I'm not okay. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And whether it's like an eating disorder or a different type of sickness or mental health, like, God, you really have to advocate for yourself, and you shouldn't have to, but you really do. And so it's a bigger social feminist commentary on that too, and some better ways for us to operate as humans.
I love that. That sounds kick-ass, and I cannot wait to read it.
Yay!
So then tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, so you asked about that. So our website is innerglowcircle.com. If you're interested in looking at what your purpose is and what you're meant to be doing with your life and what's going to make you really happy, we have a really great assessment on our website that you can find at innerglowcircle.com/purpose. And then on the social media scene, you can find me. I have a brand new account. It's at It's Katie DePaula. And then our company is at Inner Glow Circle. Lots of ats and dot coms and things.
Yeah, I know. What are we going to do when all this stuff goes away?
I don't know.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I had a blast talking to you today.
Thank you so much. It was so fun.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring today's podcast. To take the online questionnaire and get matched up with a licensed therapist today, go to betterhelp.com/Dana for 10% off your first month. And thanks also to Ned for sponsoring today's show. So make sure you head over to helloned.com/Dana and grab 15% off your order of organic, non-GMO, high-quality hemp oils and hormone-balancing blends.